listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. The Tennis.com podcast is back. It is the Australian Open preview podcast. As always, Steve Tigner joins me, Ed McGrogan here. And Steve, we have arrived, as always, as well, quickly at the year's first major. Draw day has come and gone, and I think the place that we ought to start, instead of really going through quarter by quarter, because I think that it's a little better if everybody has it in front of them, I think maybe we should just kind of really think of some notable themes that we've seen in this draw. And I think it starts at the top, as it always does. I think Novak and Serena personally both got some pretty difficult quarters to be put in. I mean, what did you notice, and what jumps off the page, I guess, when you look at their draws?
Well, I guess the first thing you look at, Serena has Sharapova and Bencic in her quarter. Sharapova may not sound like a challenge to her, but it's still a tough player in that area. Bencic beat Serena last year. Wozniacki's also there, who has beaten her. Kuznetsova is there, who has had a good start to the year. And just, normally Serena wins all those matches, but she comes in on a little bit of doubt about her knee and how she is physically. So, that's a little tricky. That's not exactly, it doesn't seem like a lock. And yeah, you sort of feel like after losing at the Open last year, to me, like she's, again that it's possible for her to lose at a Grand Slam.
Yeah, and I think that we're all kind of still, I think that the odds would suggest that once we see Serena finally step up and play Camilla Giorgi in her first round match, that it won't take too long for us to see that Serena is still the player that we knew so well from every match before the Roberta Vinci match, but we haven't seen her play a single pro match since then. And I think that really makes this this kind of tough to predict a little bit. All the players you mentioned, Sharapova, Wozniacki, Irani, Bencic, Kuznetsova, these are very lopsided records against Serena overall, and with her at full strength and at full health, there's no scenario when you would be picking against any of them. But she could face a number of them in a row. Wozniacki is interesting to me in that that's a kind of player that you're not going to want to face if you aren't ready to kind of grind and rally for a while. And so I think the Serena experience here will be one that is going to reveal itself, I think, almost match to match, because with her, I think it tends to be one of these, she's the ultimate hindsight player where we still either kind of doubt her a little bit, or we still kind of give her the benefit of the doubt so much. But this one's a little difficult to figure out right now.
Yeah, also she's had some struggles physically in Australia. She lost 2 years in a row with injuries, and last year she was sick in the first week. She had some close matches. She probably, lost a set to Muguruza, lost a set to Svitolina. So that something like that, or you feel like something like that is going to happen. It's not going to be, nothing's going to be too easy for her. Even when she was winning last year, it was never so easy.
Yeah, can we say, what would you say about that for Novak Djokovic? Now, he's a different story in that not only is he the dominant number one, had a three slam season, but Djokovic, of course, after the Open, really only seemed to get even better, which is hard to believe. And he even sort of maybe topped himself this past week against Rafa in the tune up event. And but he also gets a pretty, I think guys that on the right day could certainly trouble him. Karlovic is an obvious example with the serve, and also, if you could run into a very, searing hot Joe Wilfried Tsonga, that's not, an experience I think even Djokovic would relish. I would think that if he were to slip up, it would be because of him rather than Kane Ishikori. But overall, I do think you know Djokovic will kind of have to get into this good match mode pretty quickly given his draw here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's hard to even say if Djokovic has a tough draw. There's nobody. It's a little like Serena. You see some good names in his section, but then you look at the records, and I'm sure Djokovic's record is excellent against pretty much everybody here. I guess Karlovic is one guy. If Karlovic can get to the fourth round where he would play Djokovic, Karlovic has a 3-1 record against Djokovic, for whatever that means. He did beat him last year. And like you said, Tsonga has beaten Djokovic in the past, and Nishikori's beaten him at Grand Slams. None of those guys are a lock to get as far as Djokovic. One interesting match will be his first round against Chung, who is a 19-year-old kid who's a fun player to watch. You know, he's probably not going to win or even take a set. It would be a long shot for him to do either of those things. But I think that's an interesting first round match just to see this kid and see how Djokovic handles him. But right now, you know, Djokovic. Is I guess the other thing you would say, he has Federer in his half, which looking way ahead is a different dynamic. He'll see him in the semis. We'll see what that brings if they do play, how that affects either of them knowing they could play in the semis. That's a bit of a odd thing about this draw. They've played in the last two finals, but here they can play in the semis.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, the 10 years ago, the 2006 Australian Open was the first, I can remember it now, it was the first event that I ever wrote anything about. This is for the old, unfortunately named perhaps Gasquet and Racquet blog, but that was the first tournament I ever really wrote about. And at the time, you know, we were seeing Roger Federer at the apex of his career, and it's just, you know, funny to me that now we're seeing a guy who I think you could more or less say is in that situation, and to kind of be forecasting with him the way we were doing with Roger with Nadal at his peak. I think it's, you know, with Djokovic, I think it's he's the safest bet, you know, surely overall of this term. I think other guys have better draws than him. I think that Djokovic, you know, it's the scrutiny falls on him more than anybody else now, but it's going to be must-watch stuff for him. You mentioned there with Federer on the opposite half there. In that section as well, Nick Kyrgios, who you were pretty high on in your preview, I don't necessarily want to give it all away, but you do seem to like Nick's chances quite a bit in this tournament. I mean, is there any reason why? Do you think it's kind of time for him to really turn it around, the crowd?
I mean, he's sort of an interesting guy to watch here, an interesting pick. He's somebody new. It's not like it's interesting to think of him doing well. He's in Australia. He's been to two Grand Slam quarters. He obviously likes this kind of tournament. It seems like if he's going to go deep at a slam to start, you know, in 2016, this would be the place. He's near Burdich in the draw, which is a tough draw. They've never played each other, but that seems like a match Kyrgios could win. He's beaten Federer. As far as Federer goes, I could see an interesting third-round match against Dimitrov, who seems to be a little better so far this year. He almost beat Federer in Brisbane. He's never beaten him. You feel like at some point he's going to win one of those matches. So that's, I mean, I think Federer's got to look at that one first.
Yeah.
In the third round.
I also do like these a possible Borna Coric, Marin Cilic second round. I think that would be a nice little all Croatian match there. I have to say that, and that's certainly a winnable match for Coric. So that's one that I was kind of looking at around this draw here. If we kind of switch back to the women's a little bit, and we look, you know, maybe at a little farther down, I think overall this a player that we didn't get as much publicity week one for her achievements as compared to some of the other big results. This, I think, was based a little on, you know, where her event was, and the competition was Radwanska, and she's the four seed here. Someone that she could face right away that sometimes you look at these draws and you kind of skip over the non-seeded players, but right below is actually Jeannie Bouchard, who is now unseeded. I mean, it's quite, from one year to another here, how things quickly can turn. So a Radwanska Bouchard second rounder be quite an interesting match there. To me, you mentioned Bencic earlier. Actually, Bencic is kind of reminds me of really the spot Bouchard was in a year ago. I think really all that the microscope's going to be on her all year. I'm kind of curious to see how she handles it at this tournament and really going forward there. But if you any more thoughts on maybe this top half of the women's draw here, which I think is clearly the more superior half of the two.
Yeah, Radwanska is another interesting case. She, won a big event at the end of last year, won a tournament to start this year. She's been to the semis in Australia. She probably feels like she could have been in the final. She lost to Sybil Kova in that match. So I think she feels a little more positive about this. But she has a tough draw. Bouchard in the second round is not easy. Stosur in the round after that. Maybe Stevens or Vinci after that. And then who knows? But Kvitova after that. So that's that's sort of like another tricky draw for the top seed in this section. Sloane Stephens is interesting as a kind of dark horse in this section. She's also started the year well. We know she can play well at this tournament. She's been to the semis, and her draw is not bad. She would play Vinci in the third round. She's on Radwanska's side. She could, there's no reason she couldn't beat Radwanska if she plays well. So I think she's somebody to look at. And I also think Sloane is still enough under the radar. Maybe she won't feel the pressure the way she tends to do when, after a good result.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the progress of her in particular, with I think a pretty good year behind her in terms of kind of getting really back to the basics of what she does well and what made her the obvious talent that so many of us have seen, and now I think getting getting some validation with some good wins and I think her progress here at this Aussie Open, obviously she has quite the experience at this tournament, having beaten Serena years ago, making a run to the semis here. She's not someone to sleep on necessarily if you're kind of looking for someone who is a little further off the top 10 line, but someone to keep an eye on. I think what I want to see, one match I really want to see happen at this tournament when I was looking over these draws, maybe not if we're thinking a little earlier than a final, a dream final, a dream semi, it would be the fourth rounder between Muguruza and Azarenka, and I think you got in that potential match that would just be clearly probably the premier fourth rounder almost would be Azarenka, who is I think going to be a number of people's choice to win this tournament based on her playing week one, based on her experience, based on really a lot of uncertainty at the top. But I'm pretty high on Muguruza as well. I think that the year that she put together last year, and kind of the ups and downs that came with it, I think this is a good spot for her at the number three seed. She doesn't have too much in front of her that could prohibit her from a spot in the fourth round. I think Azarenka will be there, and I think that's one of the matches of the tournament. I think could potentially be a de facto semifinal match to see who comes along. So that's one I have my eye on.
Yeah, yeah. I think that quarter of the draw is good. You've got Muguruza and Azarenka on the same side, both players who you could even see winning the tournament. I think Muguruza is an interesting case right now. Does she keep going from last year, or does she sort of take a step back the way we've seen other players do. You know, she had to retire in the first round with a foot problem, so we'll see about that. But also in this section is Angelique Kerber, who hasn't done that much at Grand Slams, but you keep waiting, you keep thinking she can do something at a Grand Slam. She made the final the first week in Brisbane. She has a pretty good draw. You know, the other seeds in her area are Bagu, Yankovic, and Bashinsky, so you sort of feel like Kerber should. This is an opportunity for her to go a little deeper at a Grand Slam. But I do, like you said, I like Azarenka here. You know, you never know. She's always, you know, a few days away from being injured again, it seems. But if she's playing well, and she seemed to be pretty clear-headed in the last tournament, pretty healthy, you know, there's no reason to. I would take her over Muguruza in that fourth round match.
Yeah, and you know, you look just a little far down. We may as well just finish off, you know, what we see. Excuse me, the women's draw here. I think you kind of boil that section down of the third quarter into three potential winners. The fourth quarter below, I think there are, you know, cases to be made, and we just see kind of how this plays out. I think a lot of these seeds have a nice chance here to make a semifinal. You know, starting at the top with Venus, I think there's, you know, that's obviously a, you know, probably the biggest question mark in terms of just, you know, the heat and the health. I think irrespective of what we think of, you know, a Simona Halep, you know, is this setting up to be yet another kind of disappointment? You know, we'll see there. But, you know, those two, and I think you can even really go down into the other, almost all the other seeds have, you know, have either a great shot like a Lazicki serve. You have Makarova, who has tremendous experience at slams. This tournament in particular, you know, she's kind of the quintessential tough out at a slam. Madison Keys as well, and also Anna Ivanovic, who's I think on the right day can honestly beat any one of these players, and you know, she's beaten Serena here within the last 2 years too. So this section of the draw, I think, is one of the most curious to me, just because of really all the different, you know, possible outcomes that it could give us.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to pick this one. Halep is the top seed and would seem to be the obvious one, but she was hurt in the first week, and she just lost to Kuznetsova in a match that it looked like to me that she was overpowered in that match. I don't feel like that bodes well for her in this tournament, that she was just pretty much beaten by Kuznetsova with pace. So, you know, you feel like somebody else can do that in the Grand Slam. And Venus is, you know, you really don't know about Venus. She made the quarters here last year, but she just lost in the first round of her first tournament. She's already gone from number 7 to number 10 in the rankings this season. She has a potentially a tough first rounder against Konta, who had a good year last year. I guess Madison Keys is the same thing exactly. She's defending semifinal points at a Grand Slam for the first time, and she hasn't played at all this year. We really don't know what kind of shape she's in. She had hurt her elbow at the end of last year. She has a new coach, so that's all new. So I, you know, that's a very tough section to pick, and seems like somebody we will come out of there that we're not even thinking about right now.
Yes, if the eventual person we haven't mentioned yet, that would be maybe fitting for that there.
All right.
Excuse me. And Venus, I think it's a good point with the ranking for her. You know, Venus had such a strong year last year, builds up that ranking, but that's going to be hard to sustain as the year goes on. And you wonder if, you know, if she has kind of a deep run in her, you know, does she need kind of that advantageous draw? And, you know, she may have it to a certain degree just because she's number 8, but Venus, honestly, to me, has given her best against the best players. I think she has been shown to be, oddly enough, more mortal against players that we might expect her to have no trouble with. I think she is actually a case where, you know, of course she lost to Serena twice last year, but, you know, pretty much everybody else did as well. But I think with Venus, what we end up seeing, and, you know, it's hard for me to imagine Venus kind of playing after this year with just everything that's going on. It's an Olympic year. you know, it's not like I have insider trading or any knowledge, but it seems like this is setting up to be one of the last runs for Venus, and I think for that reason, I think her play at all of the slams is going to be extra, you know, special and important to follow.
Yeah, and you just don't know. She's going to be 36 this year. You just don't know whether it's all suddenly going to come crashing down in a way. She has to have a decline at some point. She's had it and she's bounced back, but you don't know whether it's just sustainable at that, and after all those years on tour. But yeah, she's definitely a player to watch at this tournament. I think she loves this tournament, and has done, you know, like last year, she did well here last year, so that she has a chance.
Did she play the 1996 Australian Open? I'm just kind of spitballing here, but did she play this tournament 20 years ago? It's amazing just to think about, even.
I would think she played it in 97, but I think that might have been her first, but yeah, it's been a while.
It's amazing stuff there. Let's retreat to the men's and the bottom half of this draw here, and I'll kind of let you have a look at it here, but yeah, maybe we should actually just start with someone who, as I alluded to earlier, probably isn't going to be a discussion point later in the term, but we're going to get the swan song for Leighton Hewitt, which will, of course, be, you would think, a night match down in Australia. You get the 3:30 a.m. or the 5:30 a.m. slot here in the U.S. Early in Hewitt's career, I feel like the term swan song is really given to someone that's more of an endearing figure, and most of us thought of Hewitt that way back when he was number one, when he was really the player that, you know, was the Wimbledon champion, U.S. Open champion. But I have to say, I mean, it wouldn't be an Australian Open without kind of that grinding Hewitt 4-5 setter. You kind of have to think it's going to go that way, and maybe James Duckworth is the perfect foil for it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when the draw was made, despite all the other top players, the first thing that the announcer who was doing the draw brought up, of course he's Australian, brought up this match, Hewitt versus Duckworth. Yeah, you know, it'll be a night match. Duckworth is Australian. Who knows how he'll react to playing Hewitt in Laver. I mean, Hewitt's recent history is that he'll go to five sets and lose. And Duckworth has played a lot of five setters at the Australian Open, a lot of epics. So.
That's very true.
That kind of has five setter written all over it. Even if Hewitt wins, then he plays David Ferrer. That's probably...
That would be really fitting with the ultimate grinder
yeah,
versus...
Right.
That's where this story ends up here. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But, you know, that's going to be a really good, you know, first couple day, really talking point, and I think there'll be some nice things to read and said about Hewitt from, I think, you know, journalists, players, people on site who've worked with him over his career. You know, even Rod, even Mr. Laver himself, who is actually, you know, he's, you know, very visible, of course, even in his own arena. It's great to see there. So I think what Leighton Hewitt gives us for the last Aussie Open going to be one of the things that we'll end up taking away from this, even when it's all said and done here. Around that, you mentioned Ferrer there, and Ferrer number 8, Ferrer couldn't pick up the his latest Auckland title. I think he had 5 and... wasn't able to collect the 6. That was Jack Sock taking that one, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, this is a quarter of the draw with another Aussie, Bernard Tomic, in there at 16. John Isner, number 10. Both of those guys actually, I think, get pretty tricky first-rounders. And Janowicz and Isner, Tomic and Istomin. And, you know, on top of it all, Sam Groth also. This is a very Aussie-heavy quarter now that I look at it very closely. But this is where Andy Murray resides. I think I do like Murray's chances quite a bit overall in this quarter, and maybe he'll be around if his wife doesn't give birth at the wrong time. That's also a topic you're going to hear about, especially from the British press. But you know, what do you think of this quarter overall?
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a quiet quarter. It's a good spot for Murray. You know, there's Federer and Djokovic are on the other side. Those are the two guys that basically he can't beat or he hasn't beaten. So he doesn't have to worry about them until the final. Wawrinka and Nadal, two other guys he struggles against. He doesn't have to worry about them until the semi. He's got Ferrer as his second seed. He's got not all that much near him. Tomic, who you never know when he could be a tough opponent, but Murray's beaten him every time, is his fourth round. Isner would seem dangerous, but can he get all the way to the quarters? So, yeah, this as long as you know, Murray's able to stay there and play, I think he has to like where he is in this tournament.
Yeah, and I think your ask of Isner to the quarters, I think, is probably ultimately, I think it's foolish to predict who, but it's inevitable, the kind of death taxes and Isner not being able to really just make it happen in best of five set here, you know, especially when we're, even though you think he might, he should be able to negate kind of the grind of it with his serve and so many free points there. I've just seen it too many times where I don't think it's likely to see where that story ends up. Mm-hmm. I think most curious from a U.S. perspective has to be what Jack Sock ends up doing here, especially, especially after he'll play the final of in Auckland. He hasn't won the title yet. But he did beat Ferrer in a very impressive win in Auckland. I think, and he's seeded 25th, a guy who, you know, with his forehand, just as much of a point-ending shot as there is in the game. And I think, you know, beyond where this quarter, the draw, this is the third quarter with Rafa and Stan, and Raonic as well. This is Kevin Anderson. This is a very, very quarter brimming with talent here. What Sock does is interesting to me. What Raonic does after following up, you know, how he follows up his win over Federer. You know, none of these guys can like where they got slotted here, given all the talent around them. And I think maybe that's your cue to kind of give us some guidance here.
Yeah, Wawrinka is the top seed in this section, and you know, you have to like his chances after what he's done in Australia the last 3 years. But he's going to have to earn it. He's got Sock in the third round, which is going to be a pretty explosive match. Two guys, I don't think anybody hits the ball harder than those two guys from the ground. And then if Wawrinka wins that, then he's got Raonic, obviously another huge hitter, and he'll have to deal with. He's never lost to Raonic. And then at the top, there's Nadal, you know, another question mark. Nadal starts with Fernando Verdasco 6-7 years ago. They played a great semifinal here. And I think Verdasco will challenge him again. I don't think that's a gimme for Rafa at all. Verdasco's won two of their last three. I still pick Nadal to win that match, but I think that's a tough one. If Nadal wins that, he looks pretty good until the quarters. But if I would say if Wawrinka Nadal quarter, I would still take Stan. I just like his game at this tournament. But we'll see. He's got that's a tough road with a lot of big hitters in this section.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody we missed among either draw? Otherwise, I can. I think we've kind of covered top to bottom. But anything else we missed from your perspective?
No, I think. Yeah, I think we got it.
Yeah, we will be providing a daily preview each day. Starting Sunday, we'll have the matches to look forward to going into the evening session, or the evening here in the U.S. And of course, Steve will have a daily report, usually on the most compelling event of the evening, that whether you stay up for it or not, we'll have our take on it, of course. Really just coverage top to bottom here at tennis.com. We'll be checking in on the podcast too periodically to at intervals where I don't, where we can, you know, say something and not have it age, you know, in just a day or so. It's difficult with the slams in that regard. This is a fun one though to I think to watch, even with the tough hours. I think that this is one. Maybe I'll take it back to this, thinking back to 10 years ago or so. Is, you know, when I'm trying to kind of get into, you know, kind of break into this sport from a journalism perspective. This is the kind of the mark of the ultimate fans following here, is braving the graveyard shift for the Australian Open. I think this is a pretty rewarding one to watch. We always tend to get, I think, you know, we look back usually at matches of the year that happen, and usually we end up going back to something that happened in Melbourne, something that happened when a lot of pretty much everybody else on your block was asleep here. So this has always been an enjoyable one for me to follow, and I think you probably agree with that, Steve, as well.
Yeah, a lot of great matches this tournament. I think the courts and the little break they have beforehand, sort of the neutral courts, the time off, seems to produce a lot of classic matches, a lot of matches where here in the U.S. you'll wake up and the five-set match is still going at 2 in the morning there. So it's kind of an immersive slam for people here. You start watching in the evening, you tape something and watch, still watching the next morning. So
it does seem endless, yeah, and it's very fitting for the whole slam experience there. So that's where we'll leave it for now. And like I said, tennis.com for all your Australian Open coverage, as well as the podcast throughout the fortnight. All right, thank you for listening. We'll be back next time.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.